Unfolding over decades, Lisa Scatolini's new novel, Eternal, is a saga of loyalty and loss, family and food, love and hate, all set in one of the world's most beautiful cities at its darkest moment. Scatolini has been researching the Italian Holocaust since her undergraduate days when she took an intimate year-long seminar at the University of Pennsylvania taught by the late Philip Roth called The Literature of the Holocaust, studying the work of Primo Levi, among others. Following that course, she knew that someday she'd write about these events. Her background as an Italian-American, a lawyer, and an adjunct professor at the University of Pennsylvania Law School fueled her interest in the subject. After she conducted decades of research, including numerous trips to Italy, Eternal was born. If you're a regular listener to this program, you know that Lisa Scatolini is one of my absolute favorite guests, and it's a great pleasure to welcome her back to the program this morning. How are you, my friend?
Oh, thank you so much for having me back. I love speaking with you, too. This is the best.
Well,
even if I have to write a whole big book to get it.
Yeah, that'd be fun. That'd be fun. Now, you know, I've known, we've talked a lot, and I didn't know about this particular interest of yours, nor did I know that about the interest in taking the course with Philip Roth, which just seems like, you know, that's a once-in-a-lifetime thing.
You know, it really was. When I look back, and this was college, so I went to college in the Jurassic, you know. But I was an English major at Penn, and he taught this seminar. 15 kids, can you imagine? I still can't believe I was in that course, because then he was a popular author. It wasn't like he was Philip Roth, you know. Like, I mean, I think he should have won the prize for literature, so. But it was amazing just to be in this class with him, and every day for him to take you through this, you know, all these kinds of novels of all different types, and try to understand, you know, what made them great and what makes them tick and why they're good. And in a way, it was like taking physics from Einstein. You know, it really was like that. And when he introduced me to the work of Primo Levi, I was like, an Italian Jew, that's so interesting. I didn't know about this. And then since then, I've been doing this research and sort of found out about it. I'm kind of I go to Italy when I can. I've been there like 4 times. I love it. And I was like, how did I not know any of these stories? And I just 7 days, I said, I'm going to write about this because fascism. I want to write about fascism. I want to write about this time of Mussolini. Italy is called the Forgotten Front. So I think even if you've read other World War II novels, this will be one that will be news to you. And of course, it's a story of these three friends who are all fall in love with each other. And what are they going to do in the beginning of this book when you be swept away as I was, you know, to the food of Italy and this pasta and the delicious wines and how Rome looks on an October day and how everything is all gold and warm and that great dust and the beautiful pastels of the houses. And I have that in there because, and I'll sort of make my point sooner or later, is that I quote Dante for you, I'll paraphrase it, because Dante said there's no greater sorrow than to remember how happy you were in a tough time. And I thought that's really the experience you want the reader to have. To have stupid it in 1930s Rome, everybody's happy, everybody's fine. Everybody's fascist. They don't know that's going to turn out to be a very difficult, bad, and maybe lethal thing. And that's the journey that these characters undergo. And so much happened in Rome at the time that I wanted to bring it to light. I felt this is a story that needs to be told. And so that's Eternal. That's the book.
So let's talk about Eternal. By the way, what did you get as a grade? Did you get a good grade from Philip Roth?
I got an A.
Well, that's...
I'm just telling you right now. I'm glad you asked that because I would have found a way to tell you.
I'm sorry. Surprised you didn't start with
Twice,
that, Lisa.
Both semesters.
Yeah, that's pretty good. You are a genius. So when it comes to this book, and this is, you know, this is sort of a press release thing to say, but I know that they've been writing when they write the press release in this book, they say that this is a culmination of Lisa Scatolini's lifetime of work. Well, but I read this book and I thought, well, yeah, that seems about right.
Do you know what? I will tell you the secret. I wrote that. I think it. I feel it. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
I was like, I've been obsessed with this my whole life. It's taken me 33 years of practice and writing 33 novels and 9 memoirs that are funny to get to the point where I think I have the chops to write this book. It's crazy.
You know, it's
true.
It has its similarities, but it is very different. It just has a saga feel to it, and it's beautiful. I'm interested in
lovely. Thank you.
As you were writing it, do you think, wow, I'm really taking on something here? Or once you got into it and you kind of put the obstacles out of your mind, you're like, okay, I know what I'm doing.
Joe, you know me. I never feel like I know what I'm doing. I'm divorced twice for a reason. I have no idea what I'm doing. Okay. You know, when people say, do you know how the book ends? I'm like, I don't even know how it middles. I don't know anything. I just know the premise, which I actually think is good because the reader is on the same journey I am. That doesn't sound impressive. But the point is that these characters are going to live their lives like the way we live ours. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. I don't know I'm going to wake up and have a stroke or so. You know, do we know there's going to be a pandemic? We don't know anything. So these characters have to fall back and rely on their resilience or lack of it. You know, they find out who they really are in Crucible. That's what really happens in the world. And so that's the story I'm trying to tell. It's Elisabetta is the sort of the main character. And I borrowed a lot of her life, my own personal life I gave to her, you know, for the emotional truth of it. What's it like to be a tomboy and have a crush and not know if he likes you? And what's it like to buy your first bra? Like, and now put yourself in 1930s Rome. And how do you get a bra in 1930s Rome, right? I didn't want to wear one then. I don't want to wear one now. So all of that emotional truth has to be in the book for it to be real. And you have to make it real. And that's my job. I do that in the second draft. The first draft was 1,000 pages.
Yeah.
So
do you, because it becomes clear, I think once I start reading about Elisabetta and I realize that she's feisty, she wants to become a novelist. And I'm thinking, oh, this is Lisa, right? I mean, you're writing from a place that you know.
Does it show?
Yeah, a little bit, just a little bit. But that is a comforting place. That is a truthful place.
Well, that's sweet of you. It is a truthful place. That's what it has to be. I tried to make her a little different. I have to figure out how. But I'll tell you one thing I did, which was, you know, you want to get these period details right, but also to the way they talk and the way they think. And I said, well, she wants to be a writer. She owns a typewriter. I actually bought the typewriter she would have for a couple $100 off eBay, right? So I get this typewriter in, and it was actually good that I did that because first I saw that the keys were white, which I never would have known if I didn't own this damn typewriter. And secondly, that I got to tell you, when I started to use the typewriter, I'm like, I heard the sound of it. Now, not all these details made it into the novel because you only have 400-some pages.
Right.
You know, all your loving detail doesn't make it in. But I secretly think that if you know it and you experience it, I felt like, oh, I know this character. And in a way, she's like me, but she's really not me. And I'm going to use her typewriter. And it was a little magical. And the book has to do that. You have to really be open to it. And all of the characters, you have to find the emotional truth in each one, which I hope I was able to do. There's 3 main characters and their families. They all have different views and different life paths, but they all exist at the same point in time, and they all undergo the same experience like all of us.
Is this the first time you've written historical fiction, going back to a full time frame?
Yeah, it is. I, in previous novels, I've had thrillers, I've had flashbacks, and I've actually had flashbacks to fascist Italy because I was showing my hand. I guess in retrospect, I was warming up. And the truth is, I will tell you the secret. The secret is, it isn't really different. Like if I set a book in Pennsylvania where I live, it isn't really different from setting it in Connecticut where I have set books.
Yeah.
Or Delaware where I'm setting the next domestic thriller. But partly you have to know the terrain in more ways than one, and you have to do your homework, and then you have to bring your imagination to it. And that was really true in this novel because of this sort of horrific true event that I don't want to spoil for people, but you want to bring it to life. And all the little stories around it, real stories of true life heroism. You know, it's crusading Monsignor at the Vatican who hides Jews during Rome's occupation at threat to his own life. things that other people do. What happens in the Jewish community? How does it save itself? I wanted those stories to be told. I think Philip Roth did too. That's probably why he was telling us about them.
One of the things I found interesting, I've read a lot of books written about fictional stories about the Holocaust, but never about the Italian Holocaust. So this really is also something
right.
that is probably new to readers.
Well, that's what I think, because it was new to me. There was a long time ago, there was the Garden of the Finzi Continis, and there has been a more recent book by Mark Sullivan, which is a wonderful book, but it's not the same subject. This is really, because what's really important about this book and about the times is that everyone knows that Rome is the seat of the Vatican, the center of Roman Catholicism globally. But very few people realize that the Jewish ghetto in Rome, which is what it's called, is also the oldest continuously existing Jewish community in Western civilization. Now, that's kind of mind-blowing. That's true. Mm. So it becomes doubly interesting when fascism comes on the scene, because Jews were very assimilated in Italy. The mayor of Rome was Jewish. And Jews joined the fascist party in the same proportion as Gentiles. So that when fascism, which was not anti-Semitic in the beginning at all, it was an ultra-nationalist Law and Order Party, starts to turn on Jews, it's doubly cruel, because it ends up taking away their professions and their property, their party membership, and ultimately their citizenship. Now, for an Italian Jew of the time, like the characters in this book, Massimo, Sandro's father, he's heartbroken, because the ultimate question in this book is one we all grapple with, which is, who am I? Who am I? Am I my uniform? Am I a fascist? Am I a Republican? Am I a Democrat? Oh, am I a thriller writer? That's funny, because I want to write historical fiction, and I'm 65. Am I allowed to do that? Can I change my identity? What really, who am I at core, is what really we all grapple with. And I really wanted to go right there. What is a woman? What is a man? What is a hero? What is a difficult time? And how do we overcome them? That's a universal, eternal message. That's the book, in a nutshell.
When you put out, since you brought it up, when you put out a book like this, when people are expecting a thriller or maybe even from the series, and this is the gorgeous book that they get, it is, do you worry about how they react to it, or you just say, like, screw them, this is what I want to write?
No, I hope they have a reaction to it, because if I write something that's really emotionally true to these characters, and the reviews of this are wonderful, and they're just coming in, but they're great. And I'm talking about the reader reviews, the things on Goodreads. That matters to me. I care about what people read and what they like what I read. I memorize reviews, okay? These cool writers who don't, believe me, I know every word. And if it's good, I'll quote it to you. If it's bad, I won't. So that's how it works. I like the masterpiece ones. That's the culmination ones. That's my favorite.
Right. But
now I forget the question because I made myself laugh.
No, well, it was funny, so who cares?
I care what people think. I do care what people think, but I want them to have a reaction, because they will be moved. A lot of the reviews say they cry and then they feel uplifted. I want you to undergo that. I write with a lot of emotionality about emotional dramatic times. You're going to feel something when I write, and that's what we're here for, to be each other's souls, and to open your soul to each other. That's what readers do when they come to a book. That's what I do every time I read and every time I write.
You know, I remember the reason I asked the question is because I had a good friend, Robert B. Parker, who wrote the Spencer novels and was just fantastic. And he wrote a book that was just a labor of love. And he wrote it. I think it was called All Our Yesterdays, and it was great. It was well reviewed. But nobody bought it. He was like, all right, I'll go back to writing what people like, and tomorrow I'll be on the bestseller list again. But I know it was crushing for him, because it was like, oh, this is the book I always wanted to write, and now I've written it, and people, you know, aren't as in love with this, and meaning that they have an expectation, and this is different.
Mm-hmm. Well, to me, first of all, I think he's terrific. And sadly, I didn't read that one. I'm wondering how I missed it, because I followed him to Westerns, for example. He loved to write Westerns,
yes,
as you might probably know. So And so did Elmore Leonard. I mean, this whole notion of what's good and what's bad is you can transplant that in lots of contexts. But to me, that's why a little bit, if I tell you the secret is this isn't that much of a departure for me.
Yeah.
Because I've always told stories about justice and love and family. That's what I that's my intersection. And Italian. I've written so many Italian characters. Someone's going to figure out someday that all my characters have really big noses, just like me. My mother always said we get more oxygen than anyone in the room.
So oh, what a lovely mom thing to say.
She was great. She could turn any negative into a positive. So the truth is that I feel like if you love my books before, you're going to love this book because it's the same thing. It's just in realm. That's all. And don't be afraid.
That's the truth. It's a beautiful.
You can say it's all big and different. I can tell you it's not big and different. I'm the horse's mouth.
Well, it's a beautiful, beautiful tale, and it's absolutely gorgeous. It's
called nice. Thank you.
Eternal. It's published by Putnam. Lisa Scottolini, I love talking to you. I wish you all the best of luck with the book, and I can't wait to talk to you for the next one.
Me too. I love talking to you too, and thanks for the assist. I really, really appreciate it.
Be well. Thank you very much. Lisa Scottolini's new novel is Eternal. It is out from Putnam. You're listening to The Roundtable.